That's where we're at tonight. Psalm 126. Okie dokie. Thank you for your prayers. If you prayed for us on our trip, it's kind of a surprise deal. So we went to an Aussie's church by the name of Ben Smoker on the first Sunday, and he had me preach for him in the evening. And in Australia, trying to build a church is about like planting a garden in the blacktop out there. And it's tough. It's really difficult. And then the second Sunday, we went to a church in Sydney that the pastor's name is John Wheat. He's, I think, a PBI graduate in his 70s, started several churches. Actually, he started the church that we went to the first Sunday 20 years ago. But yet he was sick, so he wasn't there. And Ben Smoker, the first fellow I preached for, you know, said he'd probably preach for you in the afternoon if you want. So we were there Sunday morning, and a young fellow greeted us at the door, and he said, you're going to preach this morning? And he had that look on his face like, please have mercy. I said, I wasn't planning on it. I said, I thought maybe 4 o'clock. He said, okay. And so he walked away, and I waited a couple more minutes, and, you know, 4 or 5 minutes. Then I walked over to him. I said, if you need me to preach, I'll be glad to do it. Oh, would you please? Would you? He was begging. And so then I preached Sunday school and Sunday morning and the afternoon. But it was a blessing. It was a blessing to see those folks. In Sydney, I think there were 4 of them were whites in there, 4 or 5 whites, and mostly Filipinos, 1 Nigerian, a Nigerian family. So they had probably 40, 45 Sunday morning, which is excellent for Sydney, for Australia. It's just very difficult. And Ben Smoker down south, he had probably 45 or 50 also. And he's actually paid off his building, which is an amazing thing to even have a building. The church that Heidi attends, they have 3 different places they have to go for church. 1 on Sunday morning, 1 in the afternoon, and 1 on Wednesday. And it's, you know, rent. Because the prices of things in Australia, you know, here, compared to here, you double it or triple it. And that's the cost of things there. The same ticket that we fly there and back for $1,200, from there to here and back is $3,000. Same trip, same airline, and that's just how they do it. This hymn book that we have, I bought some of those hymn books. I'm going to send them to Ben Smoker's church. And here they cost $11. In Australia, I found them for $26. And that was the best you could find. Gas was over $5 a gallon. And you drive on the other side of the road. Yeah, yeah, Australian currency. It's pretty close now. In last May, when we were there, it was, you give them one U.S. dollar, you get $1.25 Aussie money. Yeah, now... Right, right. Yeah, that'd be true. Yeah. Now it's about even up. Give them a buck, U.S. dollar, you get about $1.05 Aussie money. Yeah, yeah. So I had to drive on the other side of the road. Boy, that throws you off. I hit the turn, the windshield wipers, I don't know how many times, trying to hit the turn signal, you know, windshield wipers, you know. One time we're going into this intersection, and Jan's yelling, you're on the wrong side, you're on the wrong side. Oh, no, I'm on the right side. Oh, does it throw you off? But we survived it. Only got, I think I only had 2 people beep the horn at me. You know, I told them, hey, dumb American, sorry. So that's how it goes. But the Aussie mentality, the typical Aussie is country-minded. But it's funny, I had 2 Aussies, or 1 Aussie and 1 foreigner ask me if I was happy about Obamacare. I said, no. And they said, you're not? I said, no. Why aren't you? I said, why should I let somebody steal something from me to provide a service when I could go buy it of my own accord if I want for a tenth of the money? Oh. I said, do you realize what politics means? No. I said, well, what's a tick? It's a bloodsucker, right? Poly is many bloodsuckers. And both of them laughed and laughed on that one. Well, they thought that was pretty good. But Australia is way far advanced than us in a lot of things as far as socialism. No guns, no knives. If you have a pocket knife and you get stopped by a cop, you go to jail immediately. You go to jail immediately, and then they, you know, got to do something. That's amazing. It's amazing. But the average Aussie, very polite to Americans, and we got along with them pretty good. Okay, Psalm 126, where we're at. Let's go ahead and pray. Lord, I do pray that you'd help us as we approach this holy book, that we'd have minds and eyes that we might see, ears that we might hear. I pray you'd help us to approach your word with an honest heart and be faithful to your words. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, Psalm 126. As usual, many of the Psalms deal with the second coming. And Psalm 126 is no different. Verse 5 and 6 are often used for soul-winning verses, which can be. It'd be okay. Okay, but doctrinally, it's about the second coming or the restoration of the nation of Israel. So verse 1, when the Lord turned again the captivity of Zion, we were like them that dream. And that's the common saying, it was like a dream come true. And you can see the wording turned, past tense, even though this psalm is dealing with a future event, he is writing it in the past tense there, as if God was transporting himself looking backwards. And of course, there are many places in the Bible that does that. So when the Lord turned the captivity of Zion, we the Jews, were like them, that dream, then was our mouth filled with laughter and our tongue with singing. Then said they among the heathen, the Gentiles, us, okay, and obviously, well, not us in this case because born-again folks be in heaven. Then said they among the heathen, okay, the Gentiles, the Lord hath done great things for them. Okay, the Lord hath done great things for us, where we are glad. Okay, so that's the joy, the happiness of the second coming of Christ. The sooner the better. Okay, where all your problems are solved, it's the second coming of Christ. Everything you got. Okay, and so this is the restoration of the nation of Israel. And that occurs at the time Jesus Christ's kingdom begins, okay, and his kingdom is restored. This is the greatest doctrine of the Bible, the second coming of Jesus, when he will rule on his throne from Jerusalem. Verse 4, he says, turn again our captivity, O Lord, as the streams in the south, and then they that sow in tears shall reap in joy. Okay, this sowing in tears doctrinally, let's look at it doctrinally first, would be the Jews crying for God's help in the tribulation time period. Okay, that's if we're going to keep it within its doctrine. They that sow in tears, the Jews crying, the tears will be written or shed abroad, okay, will be written about in Lamentations, writes about their crying and their tears. Okay, but they'll reap in joy, second coming. He that goeth forth and weepeth, bearing precious seed, shall doubtless come again with rejoicing, bringing his sheaves with him. Okay, again, the precious seed is referring to the second coming of Jesus Christ. Okay, with the hope of Jesus Christ. Now, I'm sure a few of us have heard these verses quoted for soul winning. Okay, which is okay, no problem with that. Basically, the idea with that is that that you are showing your concern for people, you're showing your love for people. Does that mean you have to go around, you know, talk to people and be crying all the time? Okay, no, not that in particular. Basically, when I, deal with people and I ask the Lord to help me be in the right spirit that this person needs to make or break them, okay, meaning get them to a position where they see Christ and either they accept or reject, and help me to be in the mood, as they say, or spirit. If you want me to be as bold as a lion, help me to be that way. Or if you want me to be as gentle as a lamb, help me to be that way. Most of the time when you're dealing with people, it's being gentle as a lamb. But there are some people that you have to just lay it down right on them. Give them the truth straight up. You know, where it says in Colossians that your speech be seasoned, your speech be with grace, but then comma, seasoned with salt. Okay, and generally speaking, if you're talking to an older person, somebody older than you, you never to use a rebuke to them. 1 Timothy, rebuke not an elder. Okay, now again, I preached about this a while back, where the white culture is pathetic on that. They don't consider age at all, where the Oriental culture have this down right. Okay, you just do not see. It seems like what I've noticed in the Oriental culture, the little kids, you know, when they're 0, 1, 2, 3, they're just brats to the hilt. I mean, yell and scream and get their way and all. I mean, just amazing. But by the time they get 5, like in China, and get stuck in school, and they got cold showers and concrete buildings and everything, it beats it out of them very fast. Okay, and then that respect for someone elderly, older, is ingrained in them. Now, the extreme of it is ancestral worship. That's the extreme of it. Or emperor worship. Okay, that's the extreme. But yet, there is a Bible pattern, a Bible method, where we give forth the words of God in the manner that God wants us to give them out. Generally speaking, almost all the time, when you're dealing with somebody personally, one-on-one or one-on-two, it is with meekness, according to 2 Timothy chapter 2. The servant of God must not strive, but be gentle with all men, apt to teach, instructing in meekness. Okay, that's most of the time when you're dealing with people. Not street preaching. I'm not talking about street preaching on a street corner. I'm talking about that when you're on a street corner and you're street preaching, and then somebody comes to walk up to you personally, that's when you go to the gentle spirit. A lot of times, people think that if you're a Bible believer and you preach straight up what the Bible wants you to, that if you go to their house, you're going to stand at a coffee table and yell and scream at them. Okay, and so that's where 2 Timothy chapter 2 comes in. Okay, now this sowing in tears shall reap in joy. Okay, he that goeth forth and weepeth. There are times when you are to cry in front of somebody. Most of the time this would occur maybe with family. Just cry. Because you're burdened for them. Okay, this is Jude, verse 22. It says, and some having compassion, making a difference. Okay, compassion. That's being concerned for people. That's looking at them. That's trying to understand them. That's trying to feel their hurts. Not sympathy, but empathy. Trying to put yourself in their shoes. Romans chapter 12 says, rejoice with those that rejoice and weep with those that weep. Okay? And that doesn't mean you could just turn on the tears and everything. The third Sunday we were with Ben Smoker's church. They had a family camp, and so they had church at this camp. And for the afternoon service, Ben wanted testimonies of anybody in the church that testify about what the church meant to them. He said, I'm not talking about your soul, your salvation experience per se. He said, I want to hear testimonies of how this church blessed you. And he said, and I don't want this weepy stuff where everybody just goes, you know. This guy was so funny, man. I laughed at this guy. And so they didn't do it. One guy did get boo-hooing at the end, but it's only one. But some folks get, they just get testifying and get boo-hooing about everything. And granted, there are times, yes, you cry. Okay, but not every time. Not every time. And there are times when you're in front of somebody, you're really concerned and burdened for them. Yes, it's okay to weep in front of them. It's interesting. If you would look in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, if you type in a phrase, "I love you," and find that in the Bible, it's interesting that's only found two times in the Bible. The three words, "I love you." It's only found two times. Once is in 2 Corinthians chapter 11. Okay, verse 11. "Wherefore, because I love you not, God knoweth." You have to read the context why he's saying that. Okay. But the other one's very instructive. Chapter 12, verse, let's see, 13. Chapter 12, verse 15. I'm sorry, verse 15. And this is the demonstration of true love. "I will very gladly spend and be spent for you, though the more abundantly I love you, the less I be loved." Now, isn't that interesting? The more you love a person, you will spend and be spent for them. You'll do anything for them. Monetarily, if you have the money, your time, whether you have the time. But what happens if they reject your love? "I love you, but yet the less I be loved." That's the Bible demonstration of love. When somebody gives forth their love and concern for another party, and that party doesn't care what they think, rejects what they think, and the party that's given forth the love still loves them and still will spend and be spent for them. You see, the word, obviously Hollywood's definition of love is wacky, okay? Their definition for love is lust. But that has filtered into the church where Christians do not understand what love is. Love is that when somebody's screaming in your face, you can still kindly try to tell them about Jesus Christ and not get mad at them. Love for somebody is when they hate you, you can still try to give them the truth. Love is when you do what you can to help somebody out, you will spend and be spent for them. You will give anything you can to help them out, knowing full well that they're probably going to do what they please anyway. You see, that's what love is demonstrated. Love is demonstrated at Calvary when Jesus Christ died not for his friends. He died for his enemies. That's, you know, that's beyond human ability, to die for your enemies. And so isn't this interesting? This is in the letter about the ministry. Often young men want to get into ministry, and I don't push that much at all. You know, I don't try to get you some knots in my belt about getting preacher boys. In fact, if you can do anything else but the ministry, do it, because you don't want to be in it. And when you read 2 Corinthians and read through it, you know what the ministry is about? You start reading through 2 Corinthians. It will start off trouble, distress, suffering. It will go from there to dishonesty, corruption. That's what the ministry is all about. It's about jealousy, preachers being jealous of another preacher. It's about people leaving your church because they got some little blister on their finger. And then they expect you to love them. And of course, we do love them. And a lot of preachers will, when somebody leaves the church, a lot of preachers will burn the bridge. They'll burn the bridge and tell them how wrong they are. I will burn the bridge. I've had them leave and then come back. Why? Because I didn't burn the bridge. I've had them leave and not come back. I've seen them leave for two or three problems they had here and go to the church that off the bat they had 10 problems. And their pride won't let them come back. And if I see them, you know, around, I'd just be friendly and kind to them. Why? Because that's love. You see, that's what love does. The less I be loved, knowing full well what they've said about you. And I still love them. That's the ministry. The ministry is being blamed for something that you didn't do. See, that's the ministry. The preaching behind the pulpit, that's a very small part of it. Very small part of it. The ministry is trying to help somebody out who, after you help them out, will get mad because you helped them out. Several years ago, J. Frank Norris pastored two churches. One was in Dallas or Fort Worth, Texas, and the other was in Detroit, Michigan. Now, obviously, he did not do what I do every Sunday. He went to one, I think, for 2 or 3 weeks and the other for 2 or 3 weeks. And the one in Fort Worth, Texas, was the largest Baptist church in America, and the one in Detroit was the second largest. Now, this guy got crowds by spectacular preaching. He was quite a preacher. And the way he would get spectacular things, he'd put something on his marquee. Come here about five executives in Fort Worth, Texas that bought lingerie for their secretaries. I mean, that's the kind of stuff this guy did. And then he would have the goods on them, and he would pack them out in that fashion. Spectacular stuff. I wouldn't do that, but that's what he did. One time, he and a preacher walk on a sidewalk on one side of the road, and a guy across the road was cussing him, yelling at him, screaming at him, and his preacher friend said, "Who's that?" He said, "Probably somebody helped out last week." And that's probably true. J. Frank Norris' ministry went down the tubes after a man said, "I'm coming to your office to shoot you," and J. Frank Norris shot and killed him first. Okay, but still, the idea is, that a lot of times, the ministry, there's a fine line in the ministry. Where do you draw a line of showing concern and compassion for people versus giving people their privacy and not meddling? Now me, I'm probably too far over on one side. Meaning, let people go. I'm sure that's a complaint a lot of times. Some folks, like in Australia, one fellow asked me how I pastored two churches, and I've had people ask that, and I said, "Well, to be quite honest with you, you know, obviously it's by God's grace, but I said, I have people that are very private. They have a life to live. I have a life to live." And a pastor in Australia, he said, "Oh, you got low maintenance people." I said, "Uh-huh. Yes." I said, "Country-minded folk." And I said, "You know, it's been a blessing. You know," I said, you know, "we got some, you have to work with them, but that's with everybody." Okay? I mean, the ox stall has still got manure in there. If you don't want the manure, get rid of the ox. You know, if I don't want any problems, just get rid of the church. Okay? But that's part of the ministry. And so, that's the blessing that we do have, but yet, still, there's a fine line in a ministry of when do you try to help people, but yet God doesn't want you to help them. What if we interfere with God working on that person? There's times where you and I cannot do anything. You have reached your limit. And so what's the pattern? You withdraw. What does God do to you and I when we're not listening to Him? He withdraws. He withdraws. No more help, no more advice. Lets you get in deep doo-doo until you cry out. "Oh, you need a little help? Let me help you out." You see? And that's often what goes on. And so there's a fine line in there. You know, and where a person draws it, it's between they and God. I've been one that a man is the head of his house, you know, and he's leading his family and I'm leading my family. Okay, and we get together and get around the Bible 2 or 3 times a week, and hopefully that book right there will be our solution and the answers that we're looking for in life. But isn't that interesting, verse 15? If that isn't a verse that shows love for people and the reaction that will come back on you, You see, I will gladly, I will, notice how he says, I will very gladly spend and be spent for you. Though the more abundantly I love you, the less I be loved. Okay, back in Psalm 126, or 126 verse 5. He that soweth in tears shall reap in joy. He that goeth forth and weepeth, bearing precious seed. Okay, obviously Jesus Christ is referred to as the seed, Galatians chapter 3, and in Luke chapter 8, the Word of God is the seed. Okay, Ephesians says that we are to speak the truth in love. So how do we do that? Okay, again, I've seen this before, you know, where speaking the truth in love is you got to give it forth to people like they're a little kid. The Bible says that God so loved the world. That ain't love. That's an actor. Love is giving forth what God says gently, kindly. Sometimes open rebuke is better than secret love. You see, and that's a matter of giving it forth to someone. If a mama's little child's out in the streets, you know, playing with something, and she says, "Honey, you need to come in, get out of the street," and the kid don't do anything, then she sees a car coming, yelling and screaming. Do you think the child's going to say, "You need to say that nicely"? No, there's times you get a scream. Okay, and so her love is demonstrated by her concern. Okay, so that's 126. 127. Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh but in vain. Okay, self-explanatory, the Lord building the church, or the Lord build your family. Okay, this psalm basically shows that everything in life depends upon God's blessing. Everything in life depends upon that. If God is not doing it, then it's all a show. Okay, except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh but in vain. It is vain for you to rise up early. Now there's a good passage for some. My wife would like that one. You like that one? We used to have a plaque in our bathroom that said, "If God wanted me to see the sunrise, he'd schedule it later in the day." So, but there you go. Especially, let's see, what time is it now? We're in Australia, you know. Let's see, 8 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the morning. So, boy, that works on you. Okay, so it is vain if you'd rise up early to sit up late to eat the bread of sorrows. For so he giveth his beloved sleep. Now I've learned that that is not true on an airplane. I mean, man, it's tough to sleep on an airplane. Sydney to Los Angeles, 14 hours. That is a killer. Fortunately, on the way there, Ashley found some seats where we can lay down, but on the way back, that plane was full from front to back. I'm trying to figure out how much they make money off them planes. One plane, I figured there was 200 people on it. If you figure $300 per ticket, that's, what is that, 60 grand? One flight? I don't know what they charge, but boy, I think we'd be amazed how much money they got in those things. Okay, for so he giveth his beloved sleep. Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord. Okay, not according to United Nations. United Nations thinks you only should have one. Not according to the Georgia Guidestones. Have you ever heard about the Georgia Guidestones down there in Georgia? It's America's Stonehenge. Okay, America's Stonehenge, where somebody years ago put these Georgia Guidestones at something like the Insiders. Somebody from an Insider did it, some globalist type, some like Ted Turner, like, you know, Al Gore, Clinton, you know, Obama, some globalist. They wanted to usher a global economy. And point number one on the Georgia Guidestones is to get the world population down to 500 million. That means we're all goners. I heard about that, yeah. Is that a coincidence? Nah. The devil follows numbers. I'd heard years ago that Ted Turner says that the world population needs to drop by 98%. Of course, he'd be in the 2%, no doubt. So what is that, from 6 billion down to 500 million? Yeah. And how are they going to do that? One of them's written, two or three of them, I've read this, they've written how they want to do that. What's the best way to do that? Vaccinations. Yeah, Obamacare. What's that? Yeah? Yeah, they're working on it. Okay, but that's the idea. Children are heritage of the Lord. And the fruit of the womb is His reward. Okay, Genesis chapter 1, verse 29, I think that's Ken Gilchrist's life verse. Be fruitful, multiply, and replenish the earth. I've heard him give that lecture to several. And when you have about four or five kids, he'll say, that's a good start. So, there it is. Children are heritage of the Lord. Who's that one family that you pick up off the Duggars? Duggar family. How many they got? 19? Oh, they got 13? Wow. So, okay. Let's see. As arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. Okay, and so children, you know, if a person, if they can be blessing or curse. You know, and as far as depending on how they're raised and things like that, and of course, depending upon the parents, you know, where, you know, I thought about this, you know, as far as the bus ministry goes, of course, we don't have a bus ministry, but a lot of churches have bus ministries, and I've been a part of bus ministries. The temptation is to get the kids on the bus, but never go after the parents because you'd lose a bus rider. That's the temptation often it is. Why? Because they're so pushing hard for numbers. And so then they never witness to the parents because they're afraid if the parents don't receive it, then they'll lose their bus rider. But then you think about it further, okay, are we condoning or being accessory to the parents' wickedness by taking their kids off their hand for 2 or 3 hours? And another problem is, what do you do if when the kids come in and you find out a parent has AIDS? We had that in Rensselaer years back. And we went to the parent and said, we don't know if it's true or not. You got AIDS? He said, no. And the guy died from AIDS. You see, and then, of course, in some cases, then they bring in all the lights. We've had that down in Rensselaer years ago when we had a bus ministry, and then you got everybody in church got to get lights checked. I mean, it's an amazing thing. So you try to weigh this thing out. Okay, we didn't have a bus ministry at Rensselaer, and then we got something going, and I am thoroughly convinced God got us into it, and I am thoroughly convinced God got us out of it. Okay, both of them. Bus blew up. I mean, it got to the point where we were having these little bus kids come from an apartment, and they were talking about intimate relationships between male and female, and they were talking 5 years old talking this stuff. And that's being talked around your children. Okay, and so that's where a fine line comes in. Now, what we've been going on in Rensselaer last year. Lydia and Sam wanted to get some a little ministry going with kids, and so they've been bringing them in on a van. Now, I don't mind that because when it's a smaller faction like that, then you have you can be almost like a parent where it's a family-run thing, okay? And many of the folks have adopted some of these kids, you know, basically as they come to church, and have tried to reach out and help the kids. And it's been a fun thing to watch, you know. But I tell you, if you've never ran a bus ministry, it takes a lot. You have to, in essence, be the dad for Saturday and Sunday. When I was part of that bus ministry in Chicago, the guy I worked with, he thought he should visit 6 hours on Saturday. So you go to every single house every single Saturday. You get up there Sunday morning about 7:30, go to every single house and wake them up. And he would have to dress them. And then a bus comes back at 9:30. And then you get them on a bus and run them an hour to Hammond. And me, I would say, you think I'm going to let my kids ride a bus on a stranger I don't know? An hour away? Not on your life. And we'd pack the bus out. You know, and it's just an amazing thing. But boy, do you wear people out. It wears them out fast. And so when it's done, like if you bring in your neighbor kids in a car, that, you know, that's where, that's more the way God has it laid out. Instead of one reaching thousands, he wants thousands reaching one. Each of us one. You see, and that's basically the Bible pattern. But still, okay, verse 3, children are heritage of the Lord, blessing, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. As arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. Okay, happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. Whatever that is, how many numbers, I've heard six, I've heard more, I've heard less. Happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them, that they shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gate. Okay, where your family becomes a testimony. Okay, but then again, obviously, if you would look in Isaiah chapter 1, children get older. Okay, they have a free will like anybody else. And it was the same parents that raised Cain and Abel. Same mom and dad, same environment. Okay, Isaiah chapter 1, verse 2. Isaiah 1, verse 2. Hear, O heavens, and give ear, O earth, for the Lord hath spoken. I have nourished and brought up children. I would say he's a perfect parent. A sinless, flawless parent. And they have rebelled against me. Whenever I read the Pearl books, I always feel like a failure. But I usually find something that might help me out. Okay, but there's where God said about Israel. The ox knoweth his owner, and the ass his master's crib, but Israel doth not know, my people doth not consider. Ah, sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, a seed of evildoers, children that are corrupters, they have forsaken the Lord, they have provoked the Holy One of Israel into anger, they are gone away backwards. Or backwards, singular. Okay, that's Psalm 127. Okay, happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. One more on this one, probably uses a cross-reference, is Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians 5, obviously you can see, dealing with the husband-wife relationship. When you get down to 21 and following. Chapter 6, the first four verses on the parents and children relationship. Okay, chapter 4, verse 30, and grieve not the Holy Spirit of God, whereby ye are sealed unto the day of redemption. And let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. Clamor is yelling and screaming. I remember one time when I was in Colorado Springs, I was getting ready to knock on the door of one of the little bus kids. And I could hear dad and mom going at it, and I could hear that they were gonna wail on the kid. They were gonna do something to the kid. And so I'm at the door listening, and of course you could hear everything. And I'm gonna, and soon, about to the point where I thought they were gonna hit the kid, I knocked on the door like that real loud. And they came to the door, I said, oh, and you know, all happy now. You know, like you can't hear between the walls. And so then, you know, I don't know, I've intervened for the little kid. Maybe he had it coming, I don't know. Okay, but that's clamor. That's clamor. Yelling and screaming. What does that do? Verse 30, it grieves the Spirit of God. Verse 32, and be kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. The best place to practice that's in the home. The home is the training ground for the ministry. Okay, and so that's laid out there. Okay, oh, it's about 10 till. Time flies when you're having fun. Okay, we'll stop that. 126, 127. Any questions or comments from recovery? Okay.